Whew, after an introduction like that, I should curtsy. Good morning, everybody. My name is Bobby Carpenter. I'm delighted to be here. And I would like to start by saying, if anybody hasn't told you today they love you, I do. And just in case somebody hasn't told you, how about hugging the person next to you and telling them you love them? That's enough. Sit down on there now. Don't get carried away. And I have to tell you my one little Al-Anon joke, because if I don't, I'll forget it. Why do Al-Anons always close their eyes when they have sex with the alcoholic? Because they hate to see the son of a bitch having a good time. A very grateful recovering Al-Anon. I have been a member of Al-Anon for almost 26 years, and I'm still active. When I say active, I mean not just loving an alcoholic. I mean attending meetings and being there when somebody needs you. In case some of you do have a little difficulty in understanding a few of my words, I was born in London, England, one of seven children, from four pregnancies. My mother had a boy, and she had twin boys, then she had triplets. And my father was taken a prisoner of war and was reported missing. And after 3 years and 8 months, he came home unexpectedly. When he knocked at the door, my mother was in a state of shock. And she lost her voice for 10 days. And I was born 9 months later. So when I tell you that God definitely had me here for a reason, I'm positive about it. And I am, and the more I live and the longer I live, the more I realize that there was a reason for me or my dad coming home, and me being born. So there was a lot of years between my sisters and I, but we were a very loving family, and we grew up with a very much love in the family. And I was being the baby. I was into everything. I was a dancer, believe it or not. When you look at me now, I can't run for a bus. And I was also very athletic. I won the English championship when I was 15 years old for hurdling. And my life was just absolutely beautiful. And then after I got out of school, I became a model. Hadn't been a model very long when one Sunday morning the news came on the radio that we were at war with Germany. And I felt like my world had come to an end. Here I was, a teenager. Life was just supposed to be a bowl of, excuse me, honey, cherries. And, you know, this is what my life was supposed to be. So I had a choice. And so I decided to go into the Air Force, and I became an English WAF. And for the next 3.5 years, I had a ball. I became engaged 4 times. And again, these things all seemed to happen to me on Saturday mornings. The telephone rang, and this girl said, Bobby, can you come up here on a blind date? And at this time, I was engaged to a Canadian wing commander, and he was very much decorated, war ace, you know, I should have had the world by the tail. She said, I've got two Americans on my hands. She said, can you sort of help me out? And I said, no, really. I think I'm going to stay faithful to this one. But after deliberating for a little while, he was in France, and I thought, oh, what the heck. So I decided to go up and meet her. And we were going to meet at the Piccadilly Hotel where there was a tea dance. And I took my time getting there, and I guess it was almost, I was almost about an hour late. And they had the revolving doors, you know, in the Piccadilly. And as I started to go through the doors, I saw this handsome young American coming out, and he eyed me up and down, and he turned around and followed me back into the hotel. And when I approached the table where my friends were, he followed me over. He said, oh, you must be my date. And I said, I guess so. Well, they were playing this beautiful song, and I always take this as my song. It says, I'll be loving you always. And Cherry asked me to dance, and I fell in love. And, you know, you hear about these things, love at first sight. Well, this really was. 36 hours later, he asked me to marry him. And we had to wait to get permission to get married, but we had to wait 2 months. But during this period of this 2 months, Cherry had just gotten back from Russia, and he was stationed way out. And so we only got to see each other a few times. So I didn't understand about any drinking. Everybody was drinking back in those days, and war was going on, and the bombs were dropping, and we were dodging them. And, you know, I was in a house one night when it was cut in two from a landmine, and I was in the side that wasn't hurt. Another time I went into the post office to get stamps, and it was so full I walked out, and 5 minutes later, when I got to St. Paul's Cathedral, this place was bombed. These were and the room that Cherry and I slept in at my mother's home, that was bombed. And all these things, I know God had a reason for keeping me. So when we decided to get married, the minister said, the bells haven't been rung in 6 years. Would you like to have them rung? See, bells meant invasion. So for 6 years, the church bells in England had been quiet. So we said, yes, we would love to have them rung. Well, I believe that was a signal, too. I believe the minister was saying to us in his own way, go to your corners and come out fighting. We had our first argument on the church steps. I already was trying to change this man, change the qualities that I fell in love with. And for the next 15 years, it was hectic. They talk about abused wives. That was an abused husband. I beat him up, but after he was asleep. When he was passed out and he'd come home drunk, I'd take my shoe and beat the hell out of him. And the next morning, he'd get up and say, God, I'm sore. And I said, that's too bad. It must have been that bunch you were out with last night. He didn't know any of these things until I had talked after we'd been in the program 3 years. And I rolled him every night when he came in. And I was determined if he could spend money, so could I. So when I'd go into his pockets, and I'd take everything but leave him a little silver. And again, he would never question me, because he wasn't sure what happened the night before. And my mother-in-law, I must tell you this. When I came to this country, it was hilarious. I came over in January of 46, and they told me, it would be some time before I could get over to the States. And a friend of mine told me if I slipped the airlines a few dollars in an envelope, I could get over pretty quickly. So I went up to Cherry in the meantime, had been sent back to America, and we celebrated our first anniversary. He was in America, and I was in London. And he said, well, honey, can't you get over here quickly? So I said, well, I'll see what I can do. So I went up to the airlines, and they told me no, there wasn't any way I could get across. So I remember what this friend told me, and I slipped him a few pound notes in an envelope, and he said, when do you want to go? Will tomorrow be too soon? And this is the way I came over here. This is hilarious. And I said, yes, I'll be ready to leave tomorrow. So I got all my bags packed, and I said, well, I must send him a telegram to let him know I'm coming so that he'll be in New York to meet me. So I sent him a telegram and got to New York the next day at 2 o'clock in the morning. It was raining something awful. And as they came in, got off the plane, everybody was handed little notes. I didn't get one. I was there with no husband to meet me in a strange country, New York, 2 o'clock in the morning, with $12 on me. I was only allowed $400 to bring out of the country. I had a bank account, and it was in Tennessee, but I didn't know where. So this girl who I met on the plane took me home with her, and I stayed for 2 days with her on Long Island. And what I didn't know when I sent the telegram, that they were on strike. And so he didn't get my telegram. And so they knew some friends, and through this they got a telephone call through to Tennessee and told Cherry that I was here. So he says, go to Cincinnati, and I'll meet you there. So I said, well, Joan, this girl's name was Joan, she says, Bobby, my family will let you have the money, and you can just forget it, you know. And I said, oh, no, when we get to Tennessee, I'll send the money back to you. Now, I'm a Londoner, cosmopolitan, but I had never been on a train with bunks on them. So they told me that the bunks just went as far as Cincinnati. So I booked there, which was a good thing, and I got off there, and there was Cherry. Now, I love flowers, but I don't like them on me. And when he came to meet me at the station, I had gardenias from here to here, and I looked like the Kentucky Derby. And so we went on over to the hotel, and it was the Netherland Plaza Hotel. And so Cherry was doing something or other, and I went over to the clerk, and I said, oh, by the way, you know, I've just arrived from the States, and we are tired, and would you knock me up at 8 o'clock in the morning? Well, that was the first mistake I made. And about that time, Cherry comes over to the desk, and he said, what's the matter? The man's face was red. He said, well, I don't know whether this is right or not, but your wife asked me to knock her up. He said, she meant give her a wake-up call. So Cherry turned to me and he said, now, honey, from now on, just keep your big mouth shut. And from now on, anything you want to say, you go through me first so I can interpret it. So anyway, we came on back to Tennessee to meet this mother-in-law. 4'9" matriarch. Didn't like me right off the bat. Didn't like me because I married her only child. And I'd taken her love away from him. And I said, this is ridiculous. But she proceeded, for until she died, I was it or she. Well, for the first 13 months, we had no choice but to stay with her. I mean, at that time, you couldn't even get a room anywhere, an apartment. And I was utterly miserable. Cherry was drinking, and every time he drank, I got blamed for it. You know, and I didn't drink. This is the odd part about it. I never cared for alcohol, and I could take one drink and fall flat on my face. But I was always accused of it. And after 13 months, I'd had enough. And I told him, I said, look, you can stay with your mother if you want. I'm getting out of here somehow. So he said, well, you know, you've seen these houses that they've just built. Would you like one of them? I said, yeah, let's go. So Monday morning we took off and bought a little two-bedroom brick house, which we still own today. And we bought it on Monday, and we furnished it. Friday we moved in, and Saturday we were having a big open house. Well, of course, most of you know what happened. In his excitement, he took one too many. And when he came home, he passed out. And the guests were supposed to be arriving around 6 o'clock in the evening. And they did, and he was still out. And they asked me where he was, and I said, well, he's in the bedroom. And they said, well, can we go look at him? They all filed round the bed like he was royalty, you know. And we came out, and we went on with our party. And he never woke up. He slept through the whole thing. So the next morning, I thought, this was odd. You know, these sort of things just didn't happen. not to me. You know, I'd come all this way to marry this with this man, and I'm being treated like this. Well, this was just the beginning of a lot of things, and they were very, you know, I look back now, and of course they're hilarious, but at the time they weren't funny. And the first night he stayed out all night long, I just couldn't believe that a man would do this to me. You know, nobody in my family did things like this. They were all social drinkers. They'd take a drink or two, and that was it. That was the only kind of drinking I knew. I didn't know that people drank to excess. I didn't know that people stayed out all night. I didn't know that your husband had gambling, women, and wine all together as their disease. These are things I didn't know. I thought he was true to me only. And I found out very differently. And then I began to see all these different things happening. And I would call the police, and I would call the fire department. I would call the hospitals trying to find him. He'd check in under another name in jail, and I couldn't find him, you know. And things were going from bad to worse. In the meantime, we had become Catholics. And I went to Mass regularly. He did, drunk or sober. And one day, after about 6 years, we'd been married about 6 years, and we didn't have any children, and I couldn't have children. I had major surgery right after we married. And so the priest said to me, "You know, Bobby, I think what's wrong with you and Cherry is that you need children." Bless his heart. And he said, "I believe this would change everything. Cherry would stay home and you'd be a family." I said, "Let's go for it." So he made all the arrangements to adopt a child. And they called us and said they had a little boy for us in Memphis, Tennessee. And so we went down there. And when we walked in the room, the nun brought this baby out. And she said, "This is Marion." I said, "Marion? I thought we were going to get a little boy." She said, "Well, this is a little boy." I said, "With a name like Marion?" Because I had never heard the word, you know, the name Marion before. I said, "Sister, we're going to have to change that right now." And she said, "Why?" I said, "Well, Cherry's name, you know, is Cherry. I'm Bobby." And I said, "Another little boy in the house with a name like that?" I said, "No, we're going to have to change it." And she said, "Okay." I said, "You know, we've got a dog. And his name's Morgan. And he's queer." He ran off with the cat. She didn't like that. So anyway, we brought this little boy back to Nashville, and I thought, we have, you know, our home life's going to be perfect. And for the first couple of months, Jerry really behaved himself. Tony was very sick when we got him, and we had to put him in the hospital, and we almost lost him, and God gave him back to us. But anyway, this little boy was the joy of my life, up to a point. But then he was beginning to interfere with my obsession, which was my husband. And I loved him, but it annoyed me when he would be in the way when his daddy would come home drunk. And he couldn't play with children because his daddy was coming home drunk. And I resented all of this. I had so much resentment in me when I came into this program. And things just went from bad to worse. This little boy, when other kids were out playing, when it was just daylight, I'd put him to bed. And he'd say, "Mommy, it's still daylight." I'd say, "Go to bed. I've got to worry about your daddy." And I'd put him in bed, and then I would start to pace the floor until his daddy either came home or he didn't come home. In the meantime, my mother-in-law is giving me a fit. "If he hadn't married you, you know, he never would have been like this." And this went on continuously. And every time I picked up the phone, it was the same thing. And I got to the point where when she would call, I'd just put the phone on the side, clean house, and come back and pick it up, "Yes." And I'd go on and do something else, "Yes." And she didn't even know I wasn't there. You know, I mean, this was the sort of, she was going to say her piece, so I just let her. We'd go to parties. This damn stuff's all over me. We'd go to parties, you know, and we'd fight. And I'd leave and go home, or he would. I mean, our life was just absolutely nothing. It was nil. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't never, Al-Anon was not even heard of back then. And I did the best I could with what I had. But I was continually leaving him. I kept a suitcase packed, and when he'd come in drunk, I'd just take my little suitcase and take Tony out of school, and we'd head to Baltimore. In the meantime, my brother had come over here to live. And so this was our, you know, I kept an airline ticket going all the time. And so Cherry, I used to think I was punishing him, but he told me later he was having more fun. He didn't have me nagging him for that week that I was gone. But I would always come back. Well, around December of 58, Cherry came home. It was right after Christmas. And he said, you know, I'm leaving you. Well, now this had never happened. I was the one who left. But here he is telling me he's going to leave me. Now, this wasn't going to happen. I want to know why. He said, because I can't stand your nagging any longer. And I want some peace of mind. So I'm begging him then, you know, please stay. I didn't care whether you drank or not. Just stay, you know. And no, he wasn't going to stay. And he moved out. He got him an apartment where the airline hostesses lived. But I'll let him tell you about that. In case he needed help. In case he got sick. And so in the meantime, he gave me a car. Well, up to this point, now my husband was making a lot of money. And back then, 20-odd, 30 years ago, he was clearing $100,000 a year. Well, today that's a lot of money, but you know what it was then. And yet, I'm living in a little two-bedroom house. At that time, didn't even have a car. Had a taxi cab on call. And I would call him, and he'd say, where do you want to go, Miss Carpenter? I said, same place. And we'd go out looking for Cherry. That's how I got my jollies. Night after night, we'd get in the car, he'd drive, and I'd go. And then I became so sick when I got this little baby that I'd pick him up out of the bed and carry him in my arms and go to all these joints and dives looking for him. How sick I had become. And I usually pretty well used to find him, but there were a few places he had that I didn't know about. And one was his favorite place, and I was so mad that night. I was waiting for him to come home, and he hadn't. And I thought, I'm going to fix you tonight. So Tony at that time was about 6 months old, maybe 8 months old. And I went down to this bar where he was, and he was sitting up at the bar, you know, and I just could see him sitting there talking to this gal, you know, and telling her probably how great she was. I'm, what did you say? Oh, excuse me, it was a client. He had to close a deal. And so I walked in there, and there he was sitting up at the bar there, and I just took Tony in and just handed him the baby. And I walked out. And I figured, well, I'll tell you one thing, buddy, you'll come home tonight. And he did. He got home almost as soon as I did. But these are the crazy things that I was doing. I mean, it's unreal. Well, I was kind of upset about this whole thing, and I figured, you know, in my sick mind, the thing that's wrong with us is this house. Now, during this time, he was calling me and talking to me to be sure everything was all right. And I just approached him. I thought, well, now maybe is the time to really talk with him. So I said, you know, maybe we'll never get back together again, but I would like to have another house, which was his business. He said, well, I've just taken one in on trade. He didn't want me to get too big in a hurry, you know. And he said, if you like it, you can have it. So I said, okay. So I went over and looked at it, and I'd have taken anything, because what I omitted to tell you was after we moved into this little house, we'd only been in there 3 months when my mother-in-law sells her house and moves where her back door faced our front door. So every move I made, she saw. So anyway, I went over and looked at this house, and every afternoon when Tony would get out of school, I'd pick him up and we'd go over, drive over there and leave some things. And then the last thing that I did I went all around the house, the bushes and everywhere else, and I found all these bottles that where he I'd taken and run out the house with and hidden them out in the bushes and things, and then he'd run behind me and chase me around the house. Then he'd go in, lock the door, and leave me outside, and I couldn't get in. So I'd spend the night in the garage many times, so I knew where everything was, you know. At least I found out what my neighbors were doing. They weren't at all nice either. One had a policeman who used to visit her every night. And I knew it wasn't her husband. So the last day when I was getting ready to move, everything was gone but these bottles. And here I arrived at a new house with two cases of whiskey. And the neighbors didn't see a man. All they saw was me and this little boy and these whiskey. And then he really started to court me. And he would call me, you know, and I could tell that he wanted to be invited over. So I, you know, condescend to say, all right, you can come over. And then he would leave about, a minute. I had the milkman involved in there somewhere. Anyway. when the milkman was arriving, that's right, Cherry was leaving. Not the milkman was leaving and Cherry was arriving, you know. But I'm sure that's what the neighbors thought. They put a little red light outside my house. And Cherry has always loved big cars. And so every time he'd find a friend with a, you know, another car, for some reason, he'd say, can I use that tonight? And so every night he would come over in a strange car. So you know what the neighbors thought of me. Well, we gradually got back together again. And then he told me, he said, I think maybe we'll try again, if it's all right with you, on one condition, that you keep your big mouth shut about my drinking. And from now on, I will do all my drinking at home. I said, great. Well, you know what happened. I lasted about a week. And he, then, you see, for the first time, I realized how much he was really drinking. Up to this point, I had no idea. And I mean, he was drinking 6 pints a day. And I'm going crazy. Well, I didn't know. I went back to the priest, and he had no solution. All my friends, I had simply gotten rid of them. They didn't want any part of me. And so I happened to pick up the newspaper. So I know God was beginning to nudge me towards this program. And in it was a little article that said, if you have a drinking problem, write to this box number. And I did. And this girl, after about a week or so, the telephone rang, and this girl says, my name is Marge. And she said, I've received your letter. And I said, well, how do you know who I am? I didn't leave any telephone number or anything. She said, well, we went and looked in the telephone book, and we saw that his name and the address, so we decided that you had to be Cherry Carpenter's wife. And she said, we went to school with him, and we've known he's had a drinking problem for a long time. Well, believe you me, I was so mad. I said, I don't need you. Wham! Up went the telephone. Well, a couple of weeks went by and she called me again. I said, look, I told you not to call me anymore. My husband's fine. You see, and I could call him what I wanted to, but nobody else was going to call my husband a drunk or an alcoholic. And she says, okay. And so I guess it was a few days went by when this letter came addressed to me. And there was a piece of literature in it. And I don't know, remember, don't, I ate today. I have no conception what the name of that pamphlet was. Because back in those days, we didn't have what you have today. The people are so fortunate today to have all the help they have. But I do remember one thing, and it said, detach, and detach with love. And all the 15 years we had been married, or I had been married, it was unreal. You know, I look back over the years and I think, you know, those 15 years flew by. But in all these 15 years, I'm trying to think of the words I'm trying to say. But I had always prayed, let me say it like this, I had always prayed for him. God get him well. God straighten him out. And this time I went down on my knees, and for the first time I said, God help me. And it must have been a very fervent prayer, because the next morning I got up and he was, you know, in bed sort of sleeping it off. And I took a fifth of whiskey, a brand new fifth of whiskey. Now I wouldn't throw whiskey away. Oh no, I was very, you know. And so I kept every one of them, but I hid them. But I got this fifth out and I sat it on the kitchen table with a little note, and very sarcastic note. And I said, here's your breakfast, drink it in good health. And I got a hold of Tony and we left the house, and I never intended to come back. I was through, I thought. And we drove around for hours, and there was something kept going through my mind, don't leave town, don't leave town, go back. So about 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I really don't know, you know, I remember that all I can remember is walking in the door, the bottle was gone, the house was empty, and the phone rang. And it was the priest. And he said, Bobby, Cherry's here. And I said, oh no, Father, not another pledge. He says, no, he's going to try Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't know anything about this. I believe I might have read something about it somewhere. But it was just like God had taken this whole weight off my shoulders. I knew, I had that much faith. Although I didn't know whether he'd ever make it. I had faith this thing was going to work. You see, Cherry had become such an obsession with me that my days revolved around him. From the time I woke up in the morning, I planned his day. I wanted to be sure I knew where he was going to be at every moment. And then all of a sudden, I'm thinking, you know, this thing might take him away from me. But it didn't, thank God. Because if I make it to next month, I've been married 41 years. And he'll have been married 26. But we were in such terrible shape. You see, we'd lost our business. We were about to lose our home. And we had nothing. He had a $12,500 whiskey bill that he owed. Somebody went bankrupt on us. For another, I don't know how many thousands of dollars, that he went on a note for him whilst he was drunk. And all these things we were faced with. And I thought, if, you know, there's no way that we could come out of all of this. But anyway, when he came home and told me he was going to AA, I was delighted. I was excited. And he asked me to fix him a drink. Now, we'd been married 15 years, and I wouldn't even give him a thimbleful. I gave him a glassful. He thought by then I was completely crazy. I had lost my mind, that I completely flipped out, because he knew how I felt about alcohol. He said, well, fix me another one. And I thought, well, hell, this is AA, you know. Anyway, I fixed him another drink. And then the next day, he went to his first meeting, which, of course, he would tell you about. And he told me, he said, let's sit down and figure out these finances. You know, if we can make it, you know, in 5 years and pay off these debts, I'll be satisfied. Well, within about 6 weeks, some of the builders called Cherry and asked him to go with them again. And he went, and he took a very big cut. But he'd have taken anything just to get back in the swim of things again. And in 20 months, we'd paid off that $12,500. We paid off the bankruptcy. And all the debts that we owed, we'd paid off. And then, for my first birthday, we were so broke that he said, honey, I want to get you something. Well, he came in on April the 7th, and my birthday was April the 28th. And he said, I want to get you something. I said, I tell you what I need. This is hilarious, if you, knowing me like you do. I said, get me a lawnmower. And he went down and bought me a $39.95 lawnmower. And honey, it was just like someone had said, here's $1 million, because he was sober. And I mowed the yard and enjoyed doing it. Huh? But it was the most beautiful thing that I ever saw, that little old lawnmower standing up there in the corner. And then I began to get back to my old way again. Oh, in the meantime, I had gone to Al-Anon. This gal who called me said, Bobby, there's a program for you. And we went to our first meeting on Saturday night, an open meeting, and some of you old-timers remember Dave Rozier. Dave was the first speaker, was the only speaker that night, and I believe Rufus was there because Rufus had a birthday a day or two, and he had 10 years, and we said, oh my God, somebody got 10 years without drinking, you know. I remember sitting talking to Rufus in Virginia, and Dave talked, and he had me laughing for the first time in years. I mean, I sneered. Oh, I was good at that. But to actually laugh and thoroughly enjoy myself was almost beyond my comprehension. And all through the talk, every time Dave would say something I thought Cherry should hear, he got, you know, did you hear that? But that was okay. And I started going to my Al-Anon meetings. And of course, there were only 4 Al-Anons in Nashville at that time. I was number 5. And I think today, the other 4 are not active anymore. I know 3 of them are not. And my first meeting, I remember they told me that I did not make him drink. I was not responsible, and of course that was a tremendous relief. And I had so much resentment, they said, you will work on those with you. But you see, all we had back in those days was each other. We didn't have all these pamphlets to help us out. And so we worked together very closely, and we were very close-knit, and anybody that... And the AAs did not like us. The AAs did not want us. And that first meeting that we went to uptown, when we wanted a cup of coffee, we had to knock on the door, and they'd do like they did in the other old days, you know, they open the door, what do you want? You know, and I said, can we have some coffee? Well, wait just a minute, and they'd slam the door on your face, and they'd get a tray of coffee, bring it out, shut the door right behind you. They were so scared that an Al-Anon would tell somebody they'd seen their husband there or something. I guess, I don't know. But for those of you who don't know us Al-Anon, we don't talk about you. We had enough of you when you were drinking. We talk about ourselves and our problems and our resentments because we had plenty. But I was delighted to find out that I was not alone, that somebody else had problems just like me. And I continued to go, and Al-Anon began to grow a little bit, and then we began to get a bigger group. And then I began to get back into my old way again for some reason. I wanted a big house. And if he sold them, why couldn't I have one? He was driving a Cadillac bigger than our house. And I wanted a big house. And I kept on and kept on. And finally, one Saturday morning, he said, get yourself ready. I said, what for? He said, I'm going to take you somewhere. And he took me to a new home. He said, there it is. He'd already had it furnished. All I had to do was move in. God love you, sweetheart. And only piece of old furniture he brought with us was the humble chair. And this chair was the chair that Cherry shook out all of his drunks. He never did go to one of these rehabs or anything. And many more drunks have shaken their drunks out in our house in that particular chair. We call this the humble chair for a reason. When I get big for my britches, he says, sit in it and remember what it used to be like and what can happen again. And if I think he's getting big for his britches, I say, you sit in it. And so we call this the humble chair. So if any of you ever visit us, you will get to sit in the humble chair. But anyway, our life was beginning to really be great. And at this time now, our son was about... Let me see, how old was he? 13? 13. So we started Alateen, and he became the first member of Alateen in Nashville. They got a group together, and our life was, I thought, absolutely perfect. There was nothing that I desired I didn't have. I had all that I wanted. My home was perfect. My kid wasn't. And because of the excitement of the life that we were leading, we forgot about this boy. And he's growing up, getting in trouble, drinking. He took my car and completely demolished it, drinking. The next year, he did the same thing again. He was thrown out of high school in his senior year. This was my little angel. Well, in the meantime, Cherry and I are still going to meetings. And this, around Cherry's 10th AA birthday, well, in the meantime, Tony was about 18, 19 years old, when the service was getting ready to take the boys. And we told him that he was going to have to do something with his life. He could go to college or he could go in service. Well, we wanted him to be a lawyer. So we sent him to college, and he lasted 3 months. He graduated in beer drinking and flunked in English. And when he came home, Cherry said, "Son, you're going to do something with your life. So your mother was in the Air Force, and I was in the Army. What are you going to be?" He says, "The Navy." So he goes into the Navy, and getting him into the Navy was hilarious. That's another story in its own that would take an hour to tell, but was the funniest thing. And so he goes into the Navy, and whilst he was there, this kid becomes a member of the 50 flag team. He came out with honors. He was promoted. Our kid, you know, we couldn't believe this. We thought they had to be talking about somebody else. I mean, all the trouble he'd been in at home, all these beautiful things were happening to him. And this is the start he had in the Navy. And then he was sent to Charleston, South Carolina. And this was in about March. He'd been in there about 2 or 3 months. And the Navy didn't give him what he wanted. So he decided, to hell with the Navy. I'll just leave and do what I want to do. And I had just been elected state delegate. And I was attending my first world conference. Oh, I was getting all excited about this. Cherry was celebrating his 10th AA birthday, and we were going to have a big party at the house. And one morning the telephone rings, and this man said, "May I speak to Michael Carpenter?" And I said, "Oh, Michael Carpenter, he's in the Navy." He said, "This is the Navy. Your son has been gone 2 weeks, and he is AWOL." Now, keep in mind now, we had been in this program for 10 years. And living it up and just thinking how great everything was. And then all of a sudden, we reverted back to the way we were before we ever heard of this program. We started arguing with each other. And what's happening? Supposing this gets in the newspaper? Supposing somebody finds out? My Al-Anons were saying to me, "Bobby, what's wrong with you?" I said, "Nothing." I couldn't even tell them what was happening. I just went into a complete shell. And through some phone calls, these two lovely people in the front row here, our son was with them. But they didn't know he was AWOL. And they gave him the money to come back to Nashville. Because after we found him, we gave orders. "You get home or else I'm having the police pick you up." That boy came into our house. He was so full of resentment. He just hated both of us. And you could see it in his face. And the first words he said to me is, "Get out of my life. You've run it long enough, and I hate the pair of you." And I said, "You are going back to base." And this, of course, was hilarious, too. This is a Sunday morning. Cherry is getting ready, and I'm hanging on to Cherry, and I'm giving my orders. See, and hanging on to Tony. I'm giving my orders. "Cherry, you get in there and take your bath. Tony, you get yourself cleaned up. Daddy's going back to base with you. He's going to drive back with you." All this going on Sunday morning. So Cherry, I'm hanging on to Tony. I finally get him in the car, and Cherry goes with him. And they go to Charleston, and Cherry was going to fly back. And the next morning, I'm at the plane to meet Cherry, and the first words I said it did he get in okay? He said, hell, I don't know. He says, I took him back. So he didn't go back. And I said, yes, he did. He, no, he didn't. Well, I got on the telephone and called his base. No, he hadn't gone back. He put his daddy off at the airport and took off to Florida. And by this time, I'm absolutely nuts. And then Cherry and I looked at each other and we said, what are we doing with each other? We've had 10 years in this program. We better put this thing to use. We've been telling other people what to do, and here we are acting like two damn fools. So we got down on our knees and we prayed. And we asked God to take care of this boy. And whatever happened, we would accept. And God answers your prayers. On Cherry's 10th AA birthday, the door opened, and there was our son. And he said, Daddy, I've ruined your birthday. And, of course, we looked at him this time with love, and he says, I'm ready to go back now, and I'm ready to face the music. And I said, do you want us to go back with you? He said, no, just put me on the plane. He says, I'm sincere, I'm going back. We put him on the plane. I went to New York, or we went, Cherry went with me to New York, and on the way back we stopped off to see him in Charleston. And they gave him a court-martial and gave him 4 months in the brig. Up to this point, they'd been giving the boys a week or two or something like this, but they were making an example of him, and thank God they did. And every weekend that he was in there, Cherry and I would drive 1,200 miles every weekend. We'd leave the meeting on Saturday night, drive all night long, spend 2 hours with Tony, and drive back to Nashville. And this is where we began to find our son, and he began to understand us, and he began to understand the program that we had raised him in. You see, we took Tony everywhere with us, so he was exposed to this program. And just about time for him to get out, or a couple of weeks beforehand, Cherry and I were speaking at the Louisiana State Conference, and Bob was there. You were big people in our life, weren't you? And Cherry opened the conference Friday night, and I talked Saturday afternoon. Oh, no, wait a minute. So Cherry called the admiral of the base and told him that we were going to speak at this conference, and he thought maybe it might be a good idea if they'd let him out. And so, and he hung up the phone. And the next day he called us and said, when would you like your son? I've been thinking about it. It might do him good. And we told him right away. So they put him on the plane, and then we went on down to Louisiana. Cherry opened the conference Friday night, and I spoke Saturday afternoon, and Tony got drunk Saturday evening. Right in the middle of the AA conference. They came to get us and said, Tony's in this room drunk. So Cherry went over and got him and brought him back to the room. And he was so remorseful. And he said, Dad, he said, boy, I've messed up again, haven't I? And Cherry said, and me too, you know. We sort of put our arms around him and said, son, where else would a good alcoholic get drunk? If you're going to do it right in the middle of an AA conference. So he went back, and he still had more drinking to do. And the following May, Cherry and I were up visiting him, and we went to a meeting with him, and he got his white chip. That was May the 13th, 1971, and he hasn't had a drink since. You see, sometimes we have to let our kids hate us, but the results are good. Well, anyway, our life was still continuing. We were happy now. Tony was in the program, and I'm going back for my second year as delegate, and we came back at 2 o'clock in the morning from New York, and there's a note on the table that said, came home to get married, you weren't here, so we got married anyway. Here's a picture of your new daughter-in-law. So we go back to Charleston, South Carolina again to meet this little gal, another 5-footer, and he's 6'1". And you know what happened. Mama drags her into Al-Anon because she needs to be in Al-Anon. Her son's an alcoholic. So every time we went up there, we went to meetings night after night with this little gal, And I could tell she just didn't seem like she was contented. There was just something lacking. But we figured, well, hell, why'd he marry her anyway? You know, she's not good enough for him. And of course, everywhere Choni was stationed, Cherry and I would go, because we loved him so much that every AA birthday and natal birthday and Christmas, we went to spend time with him. But when we came, we didn't stay for one evening. We would stay for 2 weeks. And you know, we have to be careful. You know, we tend to get superior in this program when we've been in it a long time. But we took her a mink coat, jacket, for a Christmas gift. And she just took it and said, thank you, and put it aside. And I went in the bedroom to him and I said, hell with that. You know, she's not barely said thank you. And, don't tell him what I really said. And the next time he went up, we took her some diamond earrings. And the same thing happened again. And I said, you know, this is something. Here, you and I, we didn't get things given like this to us when we were that age, and she's given, she can barely say thank you. Well, I'll tell you more about that in a minute. So anyway, we go to the International in Denver, and we didn't know that this little gal was pregnant, and she didn't either, I don't think. I think she was just about finding out. They came back from Denver and went down to, Pensacola. He was stationed down there. And they called and said, we just killed the rabbit. So for the next 9 months, we went along with the rabbit. I mean, you know, it's better to call you about when they're 8 months, but when you have 9 months of it, you go all the way, you know. And then they call us one day and says, you have a little grandson. And Cherry and I took off to see our little grandson, who right now is the joy of our life. But I believe he's in training for this program. There's hardly any doubt in my mind that one day he will be one of us. Anyway, this little boy, every time we had an opportunity, we'd go to see this little boy. Now, they'd been married about 4 years when we got the first phone call that said, Tony said, Dad, I don't know what to do. Shirley wants a divorce. I said, she wants a divorce. I think he should get one. Well, they went back together next April. Dad, Mom, Shirley wants a divorce. I said, what's going on? Well, they got back together. The next year, we told our lawyer, keep those damn papers ready, because this time he's going through with it. I am going to make sure he goes through with it. And sure enough, the next April, we get another call. She wants a divorce, and she's not coming back with me, and I'm going back to Charleston, and she's going to stay in Boston. I said, but that little boy, we're going to get him. I'm going to fight for him. I'll fix her. Oh, you should have heard me. I forgot all about my program. And sure enough, we got the call, and everything was almost set. The papers were served, and I'm saying, goody. Now we can find him some nice girl, and everything's going to be perfect. Well, God, again, in his infinite mercy, he said, those two are not going to break up, no matter what you want. And so the ship that was being repaired was sent back to Boston instead of leaving it in Charleston. And so Tony went to see her and the little boy, and he was 9 years sober the day he went over there. And she took him out to dinner. And right in the middle of the dinner, she goes wild. She goes berserk, screaming, hysterical. Tony, God love him, he didn't know what was happening. And it came out. She's an alcoholic. She'd been drinking for the 8 years of their marriage, and he'd never seen her take a drink. Every time he went out in the Navy, you know, for a night, she'd go out and get drunk, get on pills, and get back. You know, home before he knew about it. And she told, it all came out. So they get on the phone and call us, well, we're back together again. Shirley's an alcoholic. Then we understood. We knew why she was such a bitch. And I found out the heart that cannot forgive is a heart that cannot receive. I learned a lot from that. And now this little girl is 5 years sober in AA. So why, that's why we say our little grandson definitely is in training. Well, anyway, I'm going to close. We do have a beautiful life. I wouldn't change my life for anybody's. There's no way. You know, there's so much humor and wisdom that we have in our emotions. You know, we don't have to stand up here and tell jokes. We're comedians, you know, and just the things that have happened to us. And our life now with our son and his wife, and, you know, we go everywhere together. We've bought a motorhome, and they love to go with us. They want to go with us. They want us to go with them. And I just can't say enough for what this program has done for us. And down in our part of the country, Minnie Pearl has a saying which I really love, and that is, says, it sums up everything. A bell is not a bell until you ring it. A song is not a song until you sing it. Love is not in your heart to stay until we give that love away. Thank you.